You found the perfect gift, ordered at UPS, and uh-oh, didn't arrive. From APM in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update. Many people who ordered their Christmas presents via UPS got a nasty surprise yesterday. No presents. The company says the volume of packages exceeded its capacity. Big online orders seem to be the culprit here. And joining us to talk about this is Diane Swonk, chief economist from Mesirow Financial. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we saw some of these UPS gifts not arrive. A lot of these were online orders. What does this tell you about online versus brick and mortar stores and how Americans shop nowadays?
Well, the reality is, no matter, you know, Americans shop, we found out that online stores are brick-and-mortar stores. The problem is the stores couldn't get everything out fast enough to be able to get it delivered by the dates they said. And it really is a major shift to where hiring will go going forward as well. We're talking about hiring more people to package gifts than to stand on store floors. As they shift and lines get blurred between brick-and-mortar and online, the reality of how we buy gifts is going to shift quite dramatically, too.
This is the last Thursday we're going to talk to you this year. I'm curious, as you look out towards 2014, what are you looking at? What are you watching for the new year?
I think, you know, 2014 could be a transitional year. We don't have the government in the way, sort of an absence of malice. The federal government actually has a budget. It's not terrific, but it is a start and going to be a better year, I think, than we've seen in the last five. And that's the best we can hope for at this point in time. We need something better than the last five to see a really healing recovery.
Diane Swonk from Mesirow Financial, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This month marks the third anniversary of the Arab Spring. In Tunisia, where the uprising began, the economy is still trying to find its footing. Many Tunisian watchers say fostering entrepreneurship is critical to recovery. So how easy is it to set up a business? The BBC's Navina Couture dropped by a networking party for startup investors and venture capitalists in Tunis.
I came here tonight hoping to find a drunk investor.
29-year-old Ziad Jalouli is the CEO of a startup called Disrupt. Ziad and his co-founder now have a prototype, but what is keeping them from launching is, of course, the money.
Here in Tunisia, the problem is that we don't have venture capital. Even if raising funds here for a big idea is really, really tough.
Frustrated with the lack of vision among Tunisian investors, many startups are now looking for some venture capital from abroad. Well, one investor who heard the call and provided some seed funding for Ziad's company is Thomas Adna from Sweden. For Adna, Tunisia has a lot to offer. The cost of hiring well-trained programmers is relatively low, but there are still drawbacks.
I just started my own company in Sweden as well, and that takes about 30 minutes. Here, it's a matter of months.
Adna's experience is quite common. The World Bank estimates that more than 50% of the Tunisian economy is under barriers and restrictions. But it's not all doom and gloom. Nabil Shadoura is a senior investment banker and now lobbying for financial sector reform. And he thinks something crucial has been happening here since the revolution 2 years ago.
So this spirit of entrepreneurial was not there, because they think that there's no equal chances to everybody to develop businesses. After revolution, they have this energy coming out and just pushing them to exploit their potential and just to think big.
But in Tunisia, things move notoriously slowly. Walid Sultan Medani is the founder of Tunisia's first video gaming studio.
It took you 2 years to raise $150,000.
Yes, but in the meantime, I spent almost the same thing.
In your own capital?
In my own money, yeah. It's a lot of money.
Even a year after he secured funding, the money has still not made it into the company accounts. And yet, his advice to aspiring Tunisian entrepreneurs is to be persistent and not give up. In Tunis, I'm the BBC's Navina Couture for Marketplace.
I'm David Brancaccio. Marketplace is listener-supported. I know that just goes in one ear and out the other, but it means it is supported by listeners like you. So to keep our coverage compelling, up-to-date, up-to-the-minute, if you can, make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount, will support your daily dose of business insight from us. Help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. You can donate by going to marketplace.org by the end of the year, December 31st. Thanks.
From South Dakota to Kentucky to Wisconsin, communities are weighing proposed regulations that would make it legal to drive golf carts off the course. Sally Herships has more on what's behind the push.
10 years ago, the local high school in Peachtree City, Georgia, had to build a special parking lot with hundreds of new spots because the teenagers there drive golf carts.
They definitely get out and use them.
Sharon Lee works at Peachtree City Golf Cars. She says for parents, the carts make good financial sense.
Yeah, you're not paying near the insurance that you do when you have a teenager.
Peachtree has 90 miles of special paths for the carts, and Georgia doesn't require them to be insured. Lee says if you run an errand in an electric cart, it's cheaper than using gas. There are 10,000 golf carts registered in Peachtree. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety says now all but 4 states allow golf carts to drive on certain roads. Brendan Ruiz is an industry analyst at Ibis World.
As the baby boomer generation continues to get older, you're more likely to see them use golf carts to get from point A to point B.
Ruiz says the average cost of an electric cart is $3,500. And he says sales are expected to hit almost $700 million this year. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Let us know what you think on Twitter at MarketplaceAPM or on Facebook at APM Marketplace. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.